in you know, what within, I think, even from what I understand, even within the Smithsonian Institution, this has been a controversial matter. And to me, yes, this is like what Aisha said earlier, protests and talking to the media and in some ways, you know, can compel the hand of these institutions. But I think we need to think even more concretely in what that should mean for the future. And it shouldn't be just a flashpoint here and there in recognition of these awful scenarios. It should be a more sweeping understanding of what we even have.
Well,
in
we're
going to
clearly continue this discussion. Samuel Redman, historian at University of Massachusetts Amherst, author of Bone Rooms, From Scientific Racism to Human Prehistory in Museums. That does it for our show. Tomorrow at 1:30 Eastern Time, I'll be doing a live stream, a panel discussion with whistleblowers Dan Ellsberg and Edward Snowden on the 50th anniversary of Ellsberg's release of the Pentagon Papers. Go to democracynow.org to sign up for the event. It's free. And a very happy birthday to Anna Gold and to Ona Phillips Guerra. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Miss Ananano, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
This is a promo
for the strange case of Nick M. Did I say Nick M? This is a sci-fi radio play about a musician with severe memory loss. For the strange case, a radio play about memory loss by Imago Theater. Did I say strange case? Tune in May 3rd at 10 p.m. on KBOO FM. Remember.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 o'clock. It's Friday. Coming up momentarily is The Gap. In the meantime, KBOO Community Radio, Eric, Anonymous, Kurt, Nicholas, and Jeffrey, who have all contributed to this. The Spring Membership Drive. You can join these generous supporters and help KBOO reach its $60,000 fundraising goal at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Next, stay tuned for The Gap on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap, where we bridge the gap between Zoomers, Boomers, and everything in between. A couple of millennials asking what the alpha is going on. My name is Tammy. On the line with me is the lovely, radiant, brilliant, youthful, joyous Althea Burns. How are you, Althea?
Hi, good morning. I'm happy to be here. I'm doing all right.
It's good to hear your voice. I feel like it's been a little bit, been under the weather, so it's nice to hear you. And of course, our terrestrial angel keeping us connected to you, the listener, Sonia. Thank you so much. How are you doing today?
I'm getting through, as they say.
Keep on with the keeping on. It's just another day here in Portland. Friday morning, the fifth Friday of the week. something we don't get every month. So that's nice to be here with you. A lot has been happening, but and I know that on the show we cover a lot of things that are happening and musings, as well as having interviews of people around town. And this show, we have a really special guest. This person saw issues happening around in their neighborhood, in their community, and they decided to actively do something about it. And on the phone with us is Don Merrill, whom you may be familiar with since they have done so much for KVU and the community in the past. And right now, Don Merrill is working as the founder of CNBC, which is helping out people, especially Black folks here in Portland, Oregon, with getting our cars right. A lot of us are familiar with the crime of driving while Black. And Don Merrill has decided, with, again, the founder of the nonprofit CNBC, is tackling this issue one taillight at a time. Don, you're on the line with us. Thank you so much for coming on the air with us. Please introduce yourself and tell us how you've been.
Thanks, Tammy. Thanks, Althea. It's been a busy year, and you know, last year was kind of a tragic year in terms of the coronavirus and our politics, and you know, there was George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and I mean, it seems that every time you turn on the news, there's a mass shooting or there is a police shooting of an unarmed driver or someone is shot in their homes. And it just got to a point where I had to think of something. And it's this idea is not a new idea. It's an idea that I had several years ago, but I restarted it last year. And so that's kind of how my year has been going since then.
And can you tell us a little bit about how, you said it's not a new idea, but how it came to you and what it is exactly that you're doing with CNBC?
Well, the inspiration for the idea was when Walter Scott, he was a Black man that had been pulled over by the police officer, I think in South Carolina, and then he was trying to run away and the cop shot him in the back. I mean, that may seem like ancient history now to a lot of listeners, considering how many other police shootings have happened since then. And then there was Philando Castile, whose girlfriend live-streamed the shooting, and that was in Minneapolis. Around that time, I heard of a guy who was changing taillights out of his business. He was in Minneapolis. And so I had a friend in Minneapolis I was visiting anyway, and so I went to go see her, and she introduced me to him. And he and I talked probably for several hours about his idea. And then he inspired me to come back to Portland and see if I could do the same thing here. And then I talked with Dan Handelman, who a lot of cable listeners are familiar with, who he is involved in Cop Watch. And I asked him about the idea of changing bulbs, you know, and what he thought of the idea, and if he thought, you know, police involvement would be a good or not a good thing in that program. And then I got the idea and started putting the idea together, but then I was working on another project and didn't feel like I could really give CNBC the attention it deserved. So I put it on the shelf until I finished the other project, which was early last year, and then George Floyd was killed. And then my wife suggested, you know, this might be a really good time to restart CNBC, and she was right. So I refiled all the paperwork and was established as a nonprofit in the state and tax exempt from the federal government, and so it's up and running.
So you're helping to get people's taillights replaced, which is one of the more common reasons that people get pulled over. When the average person sees a broken taillight, they might not perceive it in the way that police officers do. What does a broken taillight signify to a police officer?
Well, the police use a lot of shortcuts when they are, you know, doing their job, you know, just like we do, just like humans do. Stereotyping is a shortcut. Police stereotype, but their stereotyping is called profiling, more or less. And they have been using for a couple of decades now theory that's been debunked in a lot of circles, but you know it's still popular. You know, called the broken windows theory, and the broken windows theory is the idea that you know if you're in a neighborhood and you see a broken window, the first thing you should do is fix that window, because if you don't fix that window, then you'll have more broken windows, and then you know it's like it's sort of as a an entree to more serious crime. Well, the police can use the same theory when they're looking at vehicles. They'll look at vehicles and they'll see a taillight out, and they might think, okay, so this person is driving a car without a taillight. Maybe they aren't repairing their taillights or keeping their car in good repair because, you know, they've got other stuff going on. And so those cars sort of stick out to the police. It's curious to me that in some neighborhoods the police pay more attention to those burnout taillights than in other neighborhoods. I live in Clackamas County, and you know, when I drive through some communities out in Clackamas County, I see lots of burnout taillights. And sometimes I see the same car with the same burnout taillight for weeks at a time. But I would wonder if that would be true, if the same thing would be true in some of Portland's neighborhoods, especially those neighborhoods in the north and northwest part of the city.
Yeah, definitely. I myself have a broken taillight, so thank you for reminding me that. Can you talk, you mentioned a little bit how different neighborhoods are affected by, you know, by just not tending to their cars in time. And you know, different effects. I'm guessing it goes by neighborhoods and by affluence of neighborhoods. But to piggyback on that, can you talk a little bit about the stop data collection report and just what you saw there as far as what the cops are reporting to, you know, who they're reporting to arrest?
Well, listeners may not know that the Portland Police produce a quarterly report called Stops Data Collection, and it is a report that shows how often and where the Portland Traffic Division and the Portland Patrol Division stop vehicles. It doesn't say why it stopped them, but it does show the ethnicity of who was stopped and in which precinct they were stopped. And this report comes out every quarter. And the latest report, which is the fourth quarter of 2020, which would have been last September through December, that report shows that citywide, like first it's important to think about the percentages of ethnic groups in Portland. Portland has about 10,000 drivers of all races and ethnicities that were stopped in that quarter. And 19% of those stops, you know, or about 2,000, were African Americans. There's 36,000 black people in Portland. Okay, so 5.3% of the total population of Portland is African American. But in Central Precinct stopped 12.6% African Americans. East Precinct stopped 20.7% African Americans. North Precinct stopped 22.9% African Americans. Now remember, the population of African Americans in Portland is 5.3%. Now the population of other groups in Portland, for instance, Caucasians, it is 77%. So 77% white is the population in Portland, 0.6% Pacific Islanders, 0.8% Middle Eastern or Arab Americans, 9.7% Hispanic or Latino, 8.2% Asian. Whites were stopped at almost 66%, but you would expect that because their population is so high. And these other numbers show the disparity even more clearly. I mean, they are posted on a link I have on my blog. But basically, if you have a population that makes up 5.3% of the total population, and they're being stopped at 2 or 3 or 4 or almost 5 times more than par, then obviously there's something else going on besides burnout bulbs.
Right. And it all, the data also would suggest that white people are being stopped at a lower rate than their population would suggest. So, Don,
right.
You had your first event for CNBC last Saturday in Old Town, so actually going out, doing the work, helping people replace their taillights. What did that look like?
It was rainy and it was cold, but I was really pleased with the support. The city came out, city leaders came out, county leaders came out, representative from the district attorney's office came out, other nonprofits came out to support. People off the street would walk up to me and ask, like, what are you doing? And I would tell them, they would say, that's a great idea. And, you know, most importantly, people came out and got taillights replaced. We had about, at the time, I thought maybe, you know, 11 or 12 cars had had their lights changed, but I was walking the block with a sign asking people to come and get their lights changed, and I thought I saw some cars come in, and I realized later looking at the numbers that instead of 12, it was more like 7 cars. So that was about 1.3 cars every hour. The event was like for 5 hours. And for me, the fact that people showed up, you know, and got their bulbs changed and thought it was a great idea and was going to tell everybody they knew, the fact that the media showed up, the fact that Cable is talking to me now, it shows that the idea is something that people think is positive. And, you know, when we left, when we packed up, you know, even though I was wet and cold and everybody was tired and wanted to go home, I was really grateful that it went as well as it did.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Really awesome.
Tammy, go ahead.
So when we talked earlier, you mentioned that this is kind of an intersection between public safety and social justice. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. The way the climate is right now, there is nothing that you can do that you can get total buy-in from the population. Because if you do something for one group, another group is going to say, "Oh, you know, you're playing favorites." You know, like for instance, the reason why I say it's social justice is because, you know, for all of the injustice that has been done, you know, not just African American drivers, but you know, Hispanic drivers and Asian people, you know, who have been attacked, you know, in this climate, you know. Social justice is a way of saying, you know, this is what's wrong, and, you know, we all need to work together to fix it. And CNBC has a social justice component for all the people who have been, you know, extrajudiciously killed. Fixing a burnout taillight reduces one of the profiling tools that police have. So there's the social justice impact. The public safety impact is, you know, Oregon traffic regulations say everybody has to have all of their lights on their cars working. And, you know, if you don't have a working light, maybe you can't be seen at night. And I don't know how many of you have driven down a dark road in the middle of the night and see one headlight coming at you and you think, is that a motorcycle or is that a car? You know? So the public safety part is, you know, people are safer on the road. So, you know, if someone disagrees with the racial justice, social justice part, then they can say, okay, well, I can agree with the public safety part. And if they disagree with the public safety part because they think, oh, the nanny state is telling me what to do, then at least they can agree with the social justice part. So it's really a hard thing for people to argue against, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And so with CNBC, when you want to create an event like this or, you know, actually fix the light bulb, what is the cooperation that you get with neighborhoods, or whether it be auto shops? Like, what is the collaboration that CNBC does with the community?
That's really an important point, and thanks for asking that. This would not work if neighborhoods did not invite me in, because, you know, I don't want to be you know, an organization that sort of swoops into an area and says, this is what you need, you know, and the people there may agree that that's what they need, but they don't want to be told. They want to have a voice in it. They want to say, this is what we need, will you help? Rather than, you know, who the heck are you? This is what we need, but we don't necessarily need you coming and telling us this way. So when I got the idea for CNBC, what I did was I contacted all of Portland's neighborhoods. Portland has 95 neighborhoods, and those 95 neighborhoods are divided among 7 neighborhood coalitions. So I contacted every neighborhood and every neighborhood coalition. And last year, the buy-in was very strong. But this year, the buy-in has been less strong, mostly because Portland neighborhoods are, you know, they're not getting the kind of police support that they've historically had. The economy has been hard. The coronavirus has been hard. The governor just introduced new shutdowns effective today for restaurants and businesses. So a lot of those neighborhoods have pulled back because they're thinking, you know, how are we going to keep our own neighborhoods going? You know, they may see something like this as a little too esoteric. But my hope is that when they see that the first event came off successfully, they will say, okay, well, we can risk having a small event, you know, because what the Old Town neighborhood did was they used the event as a way to attract other people back to Old Town. There were other nonprofits there that worked with CNBC, and they offered people from Reverend Hennessy's group to come and talk. And, you know, there were just a lot of people there who could answer people's questions who were there not just for a taillight, but for questions about, you know, what can they do to help the neighborhood return to its viability. And so working with neighborhoods is important because those neighborhoods know who the independent bulb dealers are in their neighborhoods. They know where the parking lots are, where events can take place. They know which churches and community centers can be contacted so that they can ask their people to come out and support the event. If you don't work with the neighborhoods, then something like this can't work.
Don, we talked beautiful. A little bit about, okay. Yeah, said with such clarity, and, you know, it seems, yeah, it's very cool to go after those things, and I hope you're able to get those neighborhoods looped back in after a year of, you know, turmoil, really. We talked about the Stop Data Collection, and I'm curious about how it is you will determine the success of CNBC and determine the success of this effort.
Well, there's two ways. The first way is looking at Stop's data collection report. Like, okay, so my first event was last week. Ideally, I wanted to have at least one event every 2 weeks. And the way I just to detour for a second, the way I determine which neighborhoods get chosen is looking at the percentage of African Americans in those neighborhoods and then moving down the list of density until I get to about 10% of density in the neighborhood. Like right now, the Woodlawn neighborhood has a population of African Americans at 28.5% of the neighborhood population. The St. John's neighborhood has a density of 9.7%. At about 10%, I'd consider that average compared to the density of other ethnic groups in the city. So for me, 10% was sort of what I called par. So when I got to par, that's when I would not do any more neighborhoods, because neighborhoods below that aren't as affected by police interaction as much as neighborhoods above that number. So wait, what was the question you asked me again? I'm sorry.
Well, that goes towards it, but, you know, thinking about the data, thinking about figuring out if how do you know when you're successful in looking at trying to address this issue of police racially profiling people based on minor, you know, taillight not working, as an example, minor infractions, stuff like that.
Thank you. Sorry about that. So the way I know it's successful, two ways. First is, like I said, I wanted to do about two events a month. Hopefully I'll get to do that. I may not. But if I do, then a year from now, in April 2022, you know, I will look at the Stops Data Collection Report and see if any of those numbers have gone down. if any of them have gone down. Of course, you know, the only way they're going to go down is if, you know, you have a high volume of cars that get their lights changed, you know, because these numbers reflect, you know, hundreds of drivers, you know, thousands of drivers. So that would be one way to look and see if the numbers have gone down even a little bit, and to compare the drop, if there is a drop, to previous changes in the report before I started doing CNBC, so I can make sure that the drop was not caused by random chance or, you know, anything like that. But the other way to measure whether or not the effort has had any kind of effect is I had thought about also contacting bulb stores like Napa, Advanced, O'Reilly's, AutoZone, as well as the small independents, and ask them, do you have numbers on bulb sales? Can you show me what your numbers for bulb sales have been since April 2021? And if there is an increase in bulb sales compared to sales before CNBC started, then I can consider that a success, because even if people did not come to my event, maybe they heard about my event and they saw that they had a burnout light, like you, Tammy. I mean, like you, Althea. You have a burnout light and you said, oh, okay, I didn't go to this event, but I need to get my bulb changed. So whether it's looking at the stops data report and seeing stops go down, or looking at auto bulb sales and seeing sales go up, one of those two ways I think would tell me if the event was a success. And, you know, when applying for grants or whatever, those are the kind of metrics that foundations need to see. But I should say that this event, I'm only planning on piloting this event for a year, because, you know, it's not a complicated thing to do, but nonprofit work can be really, you know, exhausting, you know, sort of pushing a rock up a hill. I just wanted to see what I could do and if it was possible, you know, and if it works, if it shows a reduction in shootings or bad encounters with the police, then somebody else can take it up, because, you know, it will have been proven that it works and it can be done.
Yeah. So if our listeners are interested in supporting your work with CNBC, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the website is CNBC. So it's letter C, letter N, letter B, and then hyphen scene.org. And if you go to CNBC, you'll see a GoFundMe link. I've got a GoFundMe on there. Another measure to show how successful it's been so far is the day before the event, my GoFundMe had, I think it had like $1,200 or something in it. That $1,200 had been collected since August of last year, since August of 2020, right. So it took about 9 months for the GoFundMe to get to $1,200. The day after the event, the GoFundMe went to $3,100. Today, the GoFundMe is at $3,300. The goal was $2,500. So people are continuing to support it, even though it's gone past the goal. And, you know, the more money that's in there, then the more I can reimburse bulb stores and pay for, you know, things like insurance and stuff like that. So if they want to support, that's how they can do it.
And are you taking on community partners right now?
When I go into the
upcoming event,
as far as community partners goes, again, that relies on the neighborhoods. The neighborhoods know what community partners they want to have involved. Because, like for instance, at the event in Old Town, the issue was restorative justice, and so there were people from the restorative justice group who were there, you know, to talk to people about, you know, this plan that Portland has to institute a restorative justice plan to deal with some of the issues that Portland is having at night, you know, with some protesters, with some rioters. Rioters, protesters, I mean, I guess it depends on, you know, what your perspective is. But the neighborhoods really are the ones who determine what nonprofit organizations, what organizations within themselves they want to have participate. Although, you know, like I said, on the Old Town event, the state came, the county came, the city came, the district attorney came, you know, and they are sort of larger beyond the neighborhoods, but they are showing their support. So, you know, if other city council members wanted to come to future events, if other state senators wanted to come to the event, state representatives wanted to come to the event, they'd be more than welcome.
And can you give us a couple of, for the last few minutes that we have together, Could you give us a couple of takeaways from the work, you know, because you started, what, in 2016, you know, with the idea, and just kind of like what you've learned since then, considering that this, you know, it's not necessarily a solution, some, you know, to say even a Band-Aid, but when it can it can reduce so much harm, you know, from what we've seen on video. Can you just give us a couple of takeaways from the work you've been doing with CNBC?
One takeaway that sticks out in my mind, the first one, is that it's unfortunate that this is something that was created to deal with an issue regarding the police. Because if somebody breaks into my house, the first people I'm going to call is the police. It was interesting to me, though, that when I worked with a lot of the neighborhoods talking about this, and they were excited last year, all of them were very hesitant to have the police on site, all of them. You know, which just goes to show how much the culture has changed regarding the police. And I really hope that there is able to be some kind of fix and healing so that, you know, we can come to rely on law enforcement, because it's there for a very specific purpose, but it just needs to do a better job, I think. As far as the other aspects, takeaways, one takeaway was that people were really grateful for the idea. You know, they said that, you know, they said, this is not a big thing. It's a little thing, but it's something. And I really appreciate that, because, you know, a lot of times I think when people are trying something new, they have no idea if it's going to work. They have no idea what people are going to think of it. They have no idea if they've lost their mind, you know, but they try something. And I was really grateful that people were kind, you know. And I don't think they're being kind because they're being kind. I think they're being kind because they really thought the idea could actually help. And in fact, I think of the whole idea as like throwing starfish. I don't know if anybody's ever heard this story, but this kid's walking along the beach, and a storm the night before washed all these starfish up on the beach. And so this kid is walking along the beach throwing starfish back into the ocean. And this guy, this adult, walks up to him, and the kid's like 5, 6. The adult walks up to him and says, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm throwing starfish back in the ocean." And the guy looks up and down the beach and says, "There's thousands of starfish out here." He said, "You're not going to be able to save them all." And so the kid picks up a starfish and throws it out in the ocean and said, "Save that one." So, you know, I think the whole point is, you know, no matter what you are inspired to do, do it. Just do it. And you don't have to do it perfectly, and it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be world-shattering. You know, you don't have to work for a Fortune 500 company, you know. And just do it. If you have passion for something, just do it. And you also don't have to do it forever. You don't have to kill yourself doing it either. You know, you do it as good as you can for as long as you can, and then pass it off to somebody else. You know, there's lots of us out here. We all can do something.
Thank you so much, Don. It's been truly inspirational, and we're going to be looking out for you. And, of course, all of the information and websites that we talked about are going to be up on our show notes at kboo.fm/thegap. Don, thank you so much. Truly bridging the gap, you know, between public safety and social justice, and just doing the thing. I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
We'll talk soon. Thank you so much. We're going to go
Dawn.
For a very
you,
short
Althea.
Musical break here on The Gap, and we'll be back in just a moment on KBOO.fm.
Thank you, Mr. Officer Great, for all the things you said to me, for all the good that you have ever done. Without you, what would I be? Oh, the gas upon my flames, my love and rage, I roll up into one. For every time your gun goes off, a new rebel is born. So when there's 41 bullets, it's 41,000 thorns in your side. We'll take a ride down to Precinct 29, and we'll sing and dance and break the code of silence. Governor, thank you, Governor, to the mayor and the commission. she's taken to the streets, crashing through your opera house and tearing at the seats. For all the times you sign your name, someone out there dies. Found a wallet, not a gun, and mother's wiping tears from her eyes. We despise her hollow truths and honest lies. Now you can sing the monster into slumber.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I'm Althea. Tammy's here too. Sonia in the studio. We just wrapped up our interview with Dawn Merrill from CNBC. What a pleasure. And we're going to get into the talk back community question portion of the show here in just a minute. That song was Thanks Bastards by Mischief Brew. And before we get into the question, I do want to add a quick plug that KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive. The theme is growing the grassroots, which, you know, that's what we strive to do here on The Gap. That's you know, what it's all about. And so if you're interested in supporting the station, supporting the show, supporting all of the wonderful programming on this community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give, or, you know, we've entered a new age. Text KBOO to 44321. We also have a $10,000 match for the rest of the drive, which is really exciting. So your support, can go even further. Double the lengths that your donation can go and help us unlock that $10,000 match. KBOO.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321. And thank you so much for supporting us. So thinking about this community question, right? This is where we want to hear from you, the listener. One of the things that Tammy and I were especially, I mean, there's a lot inspiring about what we got to talk to Dawn about, but the idea of measuring success, whether that's in a project or in your own personal life, I was blown away by having these specific metrics and how, you know, affirming they can be if you're able to reach them. And obviously, Dawn has specific metrics for his project. But what we want to ask you, and we would love to hear from listeners, how do you measure your personal success? And has that changed over time? You know, is it money? Is it financial success? Is it your family life, your health? I know some people, it's their health. You know, your social circle, your marriage, your kids, give us a call. 503-231-8187. Let us know how you measure your personal success. How do you decide if you've achieved what you set out to achieve, and has that changed over the course of your life? Did you have different conceptions before, and maybe now it's changed?
Yeah.
Tammy?
Again, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Measuring your success, I think, definitely changes when you're a youngster versus when you have more responsibilities and then when you get older. I think that's just like how we evolve as people. Although I wonder, you know, because I don't know if that's like if your values match your how you measure your success, right? Like, I guess some people can measure their success in, you know, financial mobility or financial security or success. But then they could have like no friends or, you know, like no family to speak of, which isn't bad. Some people, I think like in our day and age, people really try to quote unquote have it all. Or I guess I can just talk from my experience. I know that I try to have it all, and by having it all, I end up having nothing because I'm trying too hard to like do everything. And I find that maybe I should like try to figure out which metric of it, like success I want to measure myself by, because I just don't know if what is actually important to me. Sometimes I wonder, like, do I even want these things that society says I should have by now? It's like I'm really not interested in. Like, if I had a child right now, I would feel bad for that kid, put it that way. So like, but I know that like people my age have kids, and it's like pretty, you know, they just do if they can. And I would kind of not, I would feel like I would fail if I had a kid right now. Like, I wouldn't think that I would measure that as a success thing, but I know that my counterparts would measure that as success because, you know, they'd have a family and a home attached to it. But I just cannot imagine that being, like, I do not measure myself in that metric at all. And then, you know, it's kind of hard because society kind of, you know, I feel like you get specific measurement units of measurement to, like, measure your success, right? And society gives you one, and then you have your own measurement, and then, like, you have the ones that kind of, like, get instilled by your community. And I think that a lot of times it's, like, a constant battle between trying to figure out when to measure yourself and live up to what measurement at what point. Or, I don't know, is the whole point of growing up just, like, smashing it all and just doing what you want? I don't know. And then there are responsibilities to your community and society. 503-231-8187 is the number. And we'd love to hear from you, the listener, because I can get real esoteric with it. Althea, do you have measurement that you, or like maybe that you, that your family has instilled in you, or maybe that you are building of your own volition?
Well, what I was thinking about as you were talking about personal success and the idea of those measurements changing as you get older, I have friends who have recently graduated college and finally being liberated from, you could say, the structure of, for example, like grades for a lot of your young life might be something that you're measured against. And either for people who didn't have great grades or who did have great grades and then now all of a sudden don't have any grades or metrics to know that they're doing the right thing, it can be a little bit unmooring, or, you know, entering the job force and figuring out, am I doing a good job? Do people like me? You know, those kinds of things. I think it can be tough to have to reset what your measurement of, you know, success. And I mean, happiness can definitely be a measure of personal success. But I think what you were alluding to a little bit is this idea of like life benchmark that you're sort of supposed to achieve. And maybe that's a measure of personal success. And I wonder if it's, I wonder if it's as fulfilling as I've been led to believe by the, you know, what do I want to say here? By the system, by the patriarchy, about
by the TV shows that we watch.
Yeah, the man
and the and these gosh darn it, Disney.
Family,
these benchmarks. I mean, these benchmarks are definitely something that's like, you know, we can, you know, every society has them, you know. You know, folks get bar mitzvahed and that's a benchmark in their lives. But then, I don't know, if they don't have a community to celebrate with, it's like, if a tree falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? If no one's there to hear it, type of thing. See, I told you I can get really esoteric with it, so I'm going to cut myself off. And again, direct the question towards the listeners. How do you measure your personal success, and has it changed over time? Pretty much love versus money. Which is better? Money, family life, health, having a elite social circle, marriage, children, being single.
I didn't even know where you were going. I couldn't help.
or building a family. Which is better? What have you done, and what? How do you personally feel about it? How do you measure your personal success? Althea mentioned a really good point of once you have a metric to measure your success, like being in school for 4 years, all of a sudden it's taken away from you, and it's probably kind of challenging to try to reevaluate yourself as a person when for 4 years that was the only thing that you were caring about. That was the only metric you had to value yourself as a student, some people, like as a person too. 503-231-8187. I'd also love to hear from like parents, because I'm sure that parents have their own benchmarks of like success as parents, because that's like a pretty hardcore job to do, like you know like raising mm-hmm. another human. And that's like really impactful.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I just want Sonia to weigh in here.
Oh, do you? Okay. I've as speaking more generally, is I find that my metrics tend to vary by what, of course, by what's important to me, which in turn tends to vary by what I feel I might lose. And so when you say, is it your health that's important? Well, health becomes a lot more important when you've been very, very ill, let's say, or when a lot of people around you become very, very ill. I know that. And so I find that my metric shifts depending on what's important to me at that time, and many things can affect that. In the space of about a year and a half, I wouldn't say lost, but three different friends all passed away within a year and a half, and that really accelerated a lot of things for me. What it became very important to me to take certain things a lot more seriously and accelerate certain goals that I'd been kind of wishy-washy about or, you know, half-hearted about. And that really lit a fire under me. So there's that.
I think a lot of us can, perfect example, you know, now with, since 2 years ago versus now, my metrics of how many times a day I clean my hands and put on hand sanitizer has totally changed, of like what cleanliness is, of what safety is, totally changed. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Sonia, you got it right on the nose there. The metrics of which we measure our success, whether it be personal or even societal, 503-231-8187. We want to hear from you, the listener. You're listening to The Gap here on KBOO Portland. Afia, any other measurements that... Yeah, what's that?
Well, I want to include our caller Mike in the conversation. Hi, Mike.
Hello,
how's it going?
Hello. How are you?
What are your thoughts here?
I'm a parent and a grandparent, and for probably the last 25 years of my life, I built what they call test systems for people like Department of Energy or Nike or Standard Insurance and stuff like that. And so they have a very engineering approach to what you're talking about, measurement of quality or measurement of best or measurement of a company's goals or something like that. And it's a process that they call agile, which means that in any situation that you go into, you first have to have a design on it, you know. And so your vision or your perspective of what you think the future might look like or something like that is very important. And so spend some time on that vision part of it. And or your ideas of best or good or what you consider those things to be. And then once you get that perspective down, then you throw something against the wall. You throw a test against the wall. You try it. You know, you jump into it. And then you look at yourself and you say, well, how did I do? And right there within that vision, you can set up your metrics for measurement right there. You can say, I'm going to measure it by number of people saved, you know, number of, you know, meals served, you know, number of anything that you're going to do. And you can measure, that's going to measure my quality or my best. And then you just analyze yourself within that perspective. So it's design, do, and analyze, and then redesign. And then that's the circle. You know, you're always in that process. You're always design, do, and analyze, and then cycle continues. And if you do it, make all your cycles really short, like whatever you measure, daily or hourly or something like that, then everything just kind of follows that thing until you get to your vision. So anyway, that's my perspective from, you know, all those perspectives, you know, parent, you know, because I've had four kids too, so I've watched them grow too. So anyway, that's it.
Thank you, Mike.
That's really good insight. And do you use that way of measuring your impact or your success as a parent? Like, is that something that you see yourself doing, or have you had to like change
I've done that, you know, and mm-hmm. I think my kids are way cool, you know. I think they're already their own engines, you know, for whatever they're going to do, you know. And so and that perspective, you know, I was in educational wise, I was always into how people learn, you know, the whole idea of touching the world or seeing the world or hearing the world, and then how that gets translated into your brain. That was kind of was my early kind of focus. And so that took me into computers, and then computers is the internet and all that other stuff. So anyway, that was the journey, and it kind of just took me to, like I said, it's really very basic, simple. And so, you know, I think my kids are a good measurement. You know, my wife was definitely a measurement. Everybody said I got the best wife in the world. She just passed it in November, so I'm just kind of going through that. But they said I got the best. So that was a good one too. So yeah, I think the measurements, you just do them, and eventually you'll find the answer or whatever you're going for.
Thank you, Mike.
Love you guys.
Very insightful.
Keep on doing what you're doing. I mean, like I said, I think the journey is the best, is the path.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a good one, Mike.
Well, that was. I'm just so inspired this morning. What a beautiful, beautiful way of seeing the world. So sorry for your loss, Mike. And thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We do have a couple more minutes if more listeners would like to call in. 503-231-8187. We're asking our community question of how do you measure your personal success? Has it changed over time? What have you picked? What was your route, and how have you measured your personal success in your life so far?
Yeah.
So inspirational.
Yeah, a lot of food for thought here. One thing that I was thinking of is times when I, like, I don't know, kind of felt like I was just going with the flow, and not, whether that's like in my job, in my personal life, not making any hard moves per se, but sort of feeling that, you know, feeling like, oh, what have I even done recently? What has my impact even been? But having moments of reflection and seeing like, wait, no, that was good. That's the thing that's different now that I made an impact on. And some things, I think, interpersonally, especially, those are sometimes you can't necessarily like time out, you know, like, oh, by May, I'll know that I've been a good friend to this one person, you know, like that's a goal of mine. I want to be a good friend, but like, you don't always know when those metrics, when it's going to bear fruit for you, when you'll get confirmation that what you're doing has been successful in your goals.
Yeah. Sometimes life will just kind of make you show up, you know, something can happen, whether it be good or bad, and you know, things change in an instant. We all saw that this last year. I don't know, this last 16 months that we've been dealing with. We've definitely seen that things can change in a moment, and how you scale or what you're even able to do is going to be like a judgment, or I don't say a judgment, but is going to show you like what kind of person you are, what kind of person you're becoming, you know, because we're constantly building. And again, For listeners who are wanting to call in and talk with us about this important question, 503-231-8187 is the number, talking about measuring your personal success, personal impact and success. It's interesting that we're kind of using that interchangeably.
Yeah. We got another caller on the line, Edie. How you doing, Edie? What are your thoughts here?
Well, I'm thinking that I was very goal-oriented, very driven until a traumatic brain injury made things different. And I wish that had been someone who advised me when I was a younger parent that not measure my success in my children's character, choices, and behavior. I mean, I'm grateful they're not in the war industry and policing and prison, you know, industrial complex. They don't do drugs and smoke. So I'm grateful for some things, but I cannot make my success based on their choices and the other people's decisions. But my success is to the degree to which I am every day ever better living integrity to my values. Am I more loving? Am I more kind and helpful? Am I being more fair? Am I weeding out my own wrong thinking that I criticize in others, like my inner Trump or inner Ted Wheeler, Portland Police Bureau? Like, what is my attitude and my behavior that is in any way like that, that I have control over? Am I planting more, you know, plants? You know, so it's more about, yes, there's the process of being more humble and caring and forgiving and gracious. There's the process of being more grateful, are more courageous and principled, but I can't have it have about 60 years of work countering racism and climate change to say I'm a failure because we're not where I want us to be after all that work. But I am successful to the degree that I keep learning and growing and supporting others and being more of the change and doing more of the change I want in the world.
An ongoing process. Yeah,
that's beautiful, Edie. Thank you for sharing that.
Inspiring.
It's not a good reminder.
Measuring yourself by, because that's it, I guess I don't have children, so that's interesting. Because I didn't know if that. I honestly just didn't know if that's how people measure their successes, by their children or not. So that's interesting that could actually be harmful. Because after all, we are all someone's kid, and we are still our own person. Interesting, fascinating. I'm learning so much about life. Thank you for that, Edie.
Hey, you guys, I love you. I hope you know that.
Thank you, Edie.
You too, take
appreciate
care.
It. Yeah, have a great rest of your weekend. We have a couple more minutes. Anybody else wants to weigh in on the idea of measuring success, measuring impact in your personal life? 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you. We've gotten some great thoughts from callers so far today. And I think it's good to bring back the idea of, you know, what can I be accountable for? What is it within myself that I can have an impact on, you know, not getting too downtrodden about the scale of some of the problems that we're facing. And this is something I was thinking before Edie called. You know, everybody should give themselves a pat on the back for making it this far through coronavirus, through all of these things that we couldn't control, whether that's the spread of the virus or the way that people choose to behave in the face of the virus, or, you know, if you've kept your business open. Like, those are all successes that should, you give yourself a pat on the back.
I just did. Thank you, Althea. And I really did for a second feel very nice and fuzzy on the inside. I think also when measuring your success or how long you've come, you can't even begin to be that without giving yourself a second to reflect, you know, relax and take a chill pill and chill out and look back at how far you've come. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be very far. It can be, you know, physically, it can be things like a behavioral thing that you're trying to change, or, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to improve on, you need a second to chill out,
look how far you've gone, and keep going. One thing that, you know, the inspiration for this question comes from Don Merrill, who we're going to have all the information on CNBC and on our show notes on kboo.fm/thegap. When we asked Don how he measures the impact of his project, he said that he wants to look back and see, look back at the reports and see if they're, if the stop and search reports, to see if there'll be less people getting pulled over for having busted taillights. But he also wants to make sure that there are no other variables that have affected that. So that's something that's also really interesting, because sometimes we think that we, you know, sometimes we're just in a situation where we can't thrive, you know, where it's beyond us, and it's circumstantial, it's situational, and we just cannot, yeah. We cannot, you know, move on. So just wanted, before we wrap up, to give folks a moment of relaxation, because sometimes it's not you. It's literally not you.
Yeah, totally. Be kind to yourself, folks. We are coming right up on it here. Coming up next at 9 is Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, so stick around for that. You have been listening to The Gap. I'm Althea. Tammy's been here. We got to talk to you. We got to talk to Don Merrill. Check out the show notes, kboo.fm. Gap. Thank you, Sonia, as always, for keeping us on the radio. This is KBOO Portland. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much for being with us, and be kind to yourself.
See ya. Happy weekend. Be kind. Bye-bye.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio